Lucis Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations, and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Welcome. Inner sight is simply seeing that which is always present, but not yet fully recognized. You have within you the ability to see yourself and the world around you in a new way with new eyes. So, stay with us, and together we'll look at the world and ourselves with inner sight. Our topic for today, Matters of Life and Death, Part 3. Before we explore this topic, I'd like to say a few words about Alice Bailey, founder of the Lucis Trust. Lucis Trust sponsors this show. Also, Alice Bailey wrote 24 books of esoteric philosophy, and those 24 books are the main inspiration for the dialogue that you hear on this show. Following thought is also from the works of Alice Bailey. We must all learn to look upon death as an act of restitution. When we can do this, it will take on a new light and become an integral part of a constant living process. Our discussion last time ended on the note of suicide being intertwined somehow with selfishness. Can we pick up on this topic again?
Yes. It reminds me of a kind of a funny, ridiculous incident that happened not too long ago on our commute home from work. We take the bus across a bridge. And that one evening, there were a lot of policemen standing around looking over the edge of the bridge, and there were vehicles, police vehicles all over the place, and it fouled up the evening commute, needless to say. Probably someone had jumped from the bridge. And the reaction of one woman on the bus we were on was especially noticeable. She was furious at her commute being delayed and was so indignant over the selfishness of this individual. And the next day we got on the bus to go home, and for some reason, even though we can take any bus we want, we don't have to take the same line each evening, there she was again, same woman, and she was talking to the person next to her, and still just as indignant 24 hours later about the selfishness of this individual who had the nerve to choose the evening rush hour to try to commit suicide. In her mind, there was no doubt suicide is very selfish because it ruined her commute. I don't know. It can sound callous to say that it's selfish, and yet, in a sense, yes, because none of us is an island. We live in a web of relationships and interrelationships that we probably have no idea of how intertwined and interreactive all the different connections we have with our fellow beings on this planet are. And if we choose to end our life early, we have to realize that the consequences are probably very far-reaching. It isn't just about us.
No, and the cause maybe deeper than we realize, because it may have to do with the particular psychological situation with this particular individual that jumped off the bridge. And if we could get at the cause before it, you know, he makes the decision to jump, then we're helping to delay or deter, let's say, the impulse of suicide in the first place. And that's where the kind of self-centeredness enters in, I think. It's not only the act itself that may be selfish, but it's because of the self-centeredness that initially created the problem in the first place. And because where this self-centeredness enters in or exists, then you have tremendous amounts of emotional energy and mental energy all piling in upon this person. It's very self-centered that creates this impossible thought form around himself, and it's very hard for him to get out of that once it, for anybody for that matter, once you get into one of these thought forms, it's hard to get out. And so that's where the real selfishness or the self-centeredness enters into the picture.
It's interesting to speculate on how the average human being views his life. I suppose most people think that their life is for them to use and adapt so that they will create circumstances that will bring them happiness. In fact, our Declaration of Independence guarantees us the right to the pursuit of happiness. Mm-hmm. And if we don't achieve that happiness, something has gone wrong. But another way of looking at our life, any human life, is to see it in a reverse sense, as we are here to serve something much greater than ourselves. In other words, we're not here to be happy or to create circumstances that are going to give us pleasure. We are here because the soul has come into incarnation for some purpose of service. Alice Bailey said the soul doesn't return to incarnation for purposes of achieving perfection. On its own level, the soul is already perfect. I find that reassuring at times when I feel especially discouraged about myself. Well, my soul on its highest level is already perfect. But it comes to serve. The soul comes into incarnation to serve. And so it's the contrast between am I being served or am I serving that decides the question of suicide. Suicide becomes a non-issue if we think we're here to serve.
Well, exactly. And I think, as also it mentions in the Bailey writings, that once the human race becomes more soul-oriented, more soul-integrated with the soul, and begins to express this, the love and the understanding of the soul in the world, then these incidents of suicide will drop away. Because, you know, we're soul-oriented anyway, so you will know that it's pointless to commit suicide, and there'll be no less desire to do it, because mm-hmm. you'll be able to see the problems and work out problems way ahead of time before that it ever gets to that point.
One of the things that's always bothered me about suicide is that it's kind of contagious among young people. And apparently that's not just a modern phenomenon, because my mother could remember many, many years ago one of the boys in her class in high school committing suicide. I think it has to do with when you're very, very young, you don't have a sense of time and the passage of life to sustain you during periods of darkness and even despair. If you live long enough, you learn that life has, to use a platitude, its ups and downs, and that everything bad comes to an end. If that's one thing we could say to young people who despair and think about suicide, it would be that everything bad comes to an end. Things will get better. And you don't know that when you're young. You don't have that sense of time and patience. And then add to that the whole pace of modern life and technology, where everything has to be instantaneous, or we get frustrated if somebody doesn't pick up the phone on the first ring, and if the internet doesn't come up immediately. We just can't stand it. Everything has to be instantaneous. And I really think this is, combined with our pursuit of happiness, probably setting up circumstances that cause deep frustration to people.
Right. I always thought the Constitution should have said, in the pursuit of joy, perhaps, and that would lift the whole focus to a little higher plane. and because joy is the quality of the soul. So maybe they'll change the constitution.
Maybe they will. Yeah. I don't know who you would speak to. But
we'll have to go back to Tom Jefferson and rewrite it. Anyway, there was also the question of suicide when it comes to like the end of life situations too, and that's a question that often comes up, particularly as the boomer generation begins to age, mm-hmm. and the parents are now living longer and all of that. So the question of ending one's life, particularly if it's a very painful process at the end, often comes up now, I think, more than ever.
Well, one reason, I think, is that medical science has advanced so exponentially in being able to sustain life far longer and through far more drastic illnesses than used to be possible. And in many ways, that's wonderful. But we have to remember that life on Earth is life in form. And the great question for society to deal with is, do we want to sustain the form, the body, past its period of usefulness, just because we think that's the only place where life can occur? If we think we are only living when we are in a body, then yes, we're going to want to sustain that body as long as we can. But if we realize that the soul incarnates and goes out of incarnation over and over again in a cyclic ebb and flow, then the body is just a vehicle for a temporary period. And that would change the whole perspective on how to come to terms with the end of life in the body.
Right, and we also have to bear in mind that the time of transition out of the physical body is really the decision by the soul, and it's not the decision of the personality, or at least it shouldn't be. And the more we understand the relationship to the soul, I think we'll be able to defer that passing of the transition time to the decision-making process of the soul, because it knows its plans. It knows when it wants to be born. It knows when it wants to die. So if we can perhaps see the whole process from that angle too, that would help deter this. Tendency to end one life too prematurely.
Well, you're talking about euthanasia, aren't you? And that's a fascinating topic. Maybe we can come back to it after mm-hmm. the break.
Okay. For those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight. Our topic for today, Matters of Life and Death, Part 3. We have a free offer from Lucis Trust to you, and stay with us for a while. I'll talk about that more in a moment. But we have a pressing need. I think our most successful fund drive occurred years ago, and it really helped us to stay on the air. We had people, listeners, who were running around, and they were cashing in their bottles and cans, and they had, instead of throwing them away, and I think what motivated them is we made them think, how many of you just throw away those cans that are worth 5 cents in bottles? And so we got enough money, miraculously enough, to stay on the air for a long time. But we can't do that type of fund drive again, because it got very confusing, because people got mixed up, and some of them sent us their cans for us to do it. We really don't have time for that. So don't do that. Even though it was successful, it was just too confusing. We have a lot of work to do in regard to the Inner Sight program is only one level of Lucis Trust. But we would appreciate your help. And if you could just continue sending donations, we've had a rough time economically, and we're pressing for it and asking you more than in previous years, because times have been much worse this time. There's a bad economy, as we all know. So please continue with those donations. It will keep us on the air. Send donations to, they are tax deductible, to Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. That's Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. The free offer is the following. We have two World Goodwill newsletters. It's two World Goodwill newsletters. What is Life is the first one. What is Death is the second. Give us a call at 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of 1-866-NEW-YORK-LUCIS. Lucis, L-U-C-I-S. And there's no strings attached. You don't even pay a shipping charge. One is called What is Life? What is Death? And you'll be able to read in a deeper level as to what the theme of today's program is. All of our InnerSight programs can be heard on our website at www.lucistrust.org. On the homepage, you'll find a link to today's program, which will be available for hearing in a day or two. Last week's program is already available, and many of our past programs can also be heard. www.lucistrust.org. We were talking before the break about euthanasia, and there are so many philosophical issues that occur with that. Perhaps we can pick up on that topic.
Yes, it's something that's very much in the consciousness now. I believe Holland has legalized euthanasia, and it's a decision made by the person in consultation with his physician. Certain states, I think, are considering it, but it's still a very delicate issue, and I think rightly so, because I don't personally think we human beings have reached the point in consciousness where we really can decide, in effect, when we've had enough. But I don't know. I can understand asking the question, because, like I said a little while ago, medical science has reached the point where it can sustain life in the body so long. And for some people and some families of ill people, that's wonderful. And they want every possible life-saving measure to be taken to keep the person living in the body. Okay. But what about the people that don't want that? But the medical professionals feel compelled to do everything they can. That's where I think people worry that there has to be some room for euthanasia, or they will be sustained in a body that no longer serves them and suffer, and on the social level, deplete society's resources. I've read that the medical care in this country is concentrated at the very end of life, in the last 6 months of life. The far, far greatest amount of medical care is spent on prolonging life by another 6 months. And we all have to ask ourselves, is it really worth it? Is the quality of life in those final months really worth it? I suppose it varies with every individual, but it's a huge social question.
Right, and sometimes if there is a lot of pain and suffering at the end, then a euthanasia is warranted, I think. Mm-hmm. That at that point, you see, the any karmic debt or thing like that is left over is not really present anymore, I think, because the physical body has run its course, it has served its purpose well in this particular lifetime, and the soul is ready to move on and depart.
But what about the case you and I were talking about just a few days ago of a person who has been diagnosed with Alzheimer's and is afraid of reaching a point where she can no longer make the decision to end her life, and she doesn't want to be a burden to her family? Should she end her life while she still has enough faculties to know what she's doing?
Well, that's her choice. Here again, we don't want to step in and say, no, you can't do that. But I think maybe here again, just not thinking through the responsibility aspect of it, because maybe it would be interfering with the soul's plans to end it prematurely. Maybe it would be interfering with the soul of the family members who would have to take care of her, or the caregivers. There are all these other questions, so it's not just the one individual that's involved.
Mm-hmm.
There are other, as we said earlier, there are other people involved if you're going to take your life prematurely.
Well, yes, in all these discussions on matters of life and death, I think the mantra that ought to be repeating in our minds is, it's not just about me.
No, exactly. And it's because there's also the law of karma involved. And are you setting aside your own karma when you remove yourself from the scene prematurely?
Mm-hmm. Refusing to suffer.
Yes, maybe this pain and suffering is part of the lessons that this soul has chosen to learn.
Mm-hmm. These are huge questions. Alice Bailey said something very interesting about euthanasia in her book Esoteric Healing. She said that the problem of euthanasia won't exist when there is continuity of consciousness. She's speaking about an evolutionary stage that human beings haven't yet reached, but which lies in our future. She said there will be a time when continuity of consciousness has been achieved, and the soul will be able to the soul knows when its term of physical life is over, but it will be able, in this evolutionary step forward, to be able to impress that awareness, that knowledge, upon the entity living in the body. There will be enough communication between soul and form for the soul to impress its will, its purpose, on the entity in the form, and to set up the series of events that enable the soul to consciously withdraw from the form.
Right. I think that's the key, is more education on the nature of the soul and the position that the soul has in the whole process of death. And we don't understand that process here in this Western world, I don't think. And there needs to be a lot more education on this. And once it's recognized and once it's accepted as just a part of life, that death is simply a part of life, and really there is no death, because the individual in the body continues on. It's immortal. It doesn't die. Only the physical body disintegrates and departs. And there could be more discussion on this and more education on this, then I think society would be moving ahead on this whole issue.
It would certainly have ramifications for the medical profession. I think they do wonderful things, and the debt of humanity to the medical profession is great, but their whole training is understandably about preserving and sustaining life in the form. That's what medicine is, as we know it in the West. It's about preserving life in form. And so their whole impulse, their whole raison d'etre is to keep the form living. And so I think maybe if one believes one has gotten to the end of one's life, as one lady I knew who was 95 believed, the best thing to do is to not let yourself get into a hospital, because not only do they have their training that encourages them to do every measure, take every measure they can think of to preserve life, there are also the legal consequences that hospitals quite rightly are worried about. And if you are able to be at home and with family members, I would imagine death can come rather quickly.
Yes, if it's allowed, for the soul is allowed to do its thing, when that moment comes, it can be very quick and painless, and Very, very beautiful.
Yes.
In fact, if one wants to see death as a liberation from this diseased and infirm physical body.
I think the people in hospice care understand this very well. My father died in hospice care, and I remember the nurse saying to me, it's a struggle to be born and it's a struggle to die. And Alice Bailey would echo that it takes a considerable act of will for the soul to release its body, its instrument. But if we follow the perspective of hospice care, they understand that the body, the entity, knows when it's time to die. It doesn't want to drink. It doesn't want to eat. The refusal of food and drink is normal. And to force water and food on a person who is preparing to die makes no sense. And yet that's what well-meaning human beings tend to do. Hospice care has made great headway in understanding how to bring about death at the right moment. Behind all of this discussion, there is that great law of esoteric healing, which says there is naught but energy, for God is life. And keeping that in mind, the cyclic ebb and flow of life in form and out of the form becomes much more of an accepted and even beautiful reality. Alice Bailey said that the true spiritual meaning of freedom is pulling away from form. And she said it's the sensed freedom that lies behind the urge towards spiritual liberation at every step of the way, from the beginning aspirant to the master of the higher initiations. In the pulling away from form lies freedom. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could view birth and death in those circumstances?
Please take advantage of the free offer from Lucis Trust. And those are the two World Goodwill newsletters. Topic of one is, what is life? The second one, what is death? Give us a call. Ask for them. There's no charge, not even a shipping charge. We'll be happy to send them out to you right away. Give us a call at our toll-free number, 1-866-NY-LUCIS. That's 1-866. Think of New York, LUCIS. Numerically, it's 1-866-695-8247. That's 1-866-695-8247. You've been listening to Inner Sight. Now we would like to close with a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.